Twitter was wild. You had Joe Rogan get absolutely having enough of a particular doctor. Elon Musk getting in on the conversation. Dr. Mark Cuban. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Pharmaceutical salesman Mark Cuban weighing in on everything. And I'm here to break it all down, how it started, how it's going now, and the ongoing cope and seethe on Twitter. Right now, there are a lot of people with very bad ideas tweeting various versions of Debate Me Bros bad. Now, traditionally, Debate Me Bros are leftist weirdos on YouTube, and yes, they are bad. However, in this particular case, you have a bunch of kind of cultists having meltdowns about having to defend their worship of the jab. Now, I'm going to say this again. I've always been very, very clear, but given this topic's divisiveness, I want to remind people, I am not a doctor, and I have zero opinion about whether or not you got it. It's none of my business. I assume you made the best choice for you, okay? That's just the facts of it. I never, had a problem with people doing this. I had a problem with, forcing it on people or mandatory stuff. That's where my opinion, just to remind people. Now, it started with Professor Peter Hotez trying to get Joe Rogan deplatformed and having it basically backfire spectacularly. Joe Rogan had RFK on his podcast, and RFK has a lot of opinions about the jab, opinions that people on the left and the right both agree with and disagree with. He's an interesting figure because he brings in a lot of people on the right that agree with him on a lot of things, even though he's a Democrat. And so Joe Rogan has him on. They talk about various studies and various things about the poke, which, again, I'm not a doctor. I suggest you just watch the episode and, make up your own mind. But he tweets that Spotify has stopped even sort of trying to stem Joe Rogan's poke misinformation. It's really true that Anna Merlan is just awful. And from all of the online attacks I'm receiving after this absurd podcast, it's clear that many actually believe this nonsense. Now, of course, this article was on Vice, so it was read by about 7 people. And Elon Musk getting in on everything. But before that, Joe Rogan, obviously not too happy with this guy trying to get him deplatformed, trying to, use the media to get him deplatformed, just unloaded on Saturday on Twitter. And I want to go back to the very beginning of it because this is where it started. Now, Joe Rogan basically puts out, there's a lot of interesting conversation happening around RFK's opinion on the Joe Rogan podcast. Then, of course, old Dr. Deplatforming had, Vice write an article, wrote an article for Vice so he could try to whine and complain. So on Saturday, Joe Rogan logged on Twitter and has had enough, saying, in regards to the Vice article, Peter, if you claim what RFK Jr. is saying is misinformation, I am offering you $100,000 to the charity of your choice if you're willing to debate him on my show with no time limit. Now, this is, after much back and forth, an offer that the doctor had just outright refused, even as that number swelled to over $600,000 in charitable donations, plus coffee brand coffee threw in a single bag of coffee. I thought that would have tipped the scales. But so essentially going back and forth, people adding more and more money or more and more money. Peter Holtz puts this tweet out, then deletes it, saying, be serious, Joe. That's what you throw out for your hunting buddies on a weekend. A $50 million endowment, which you, Spotify, and RFK Jr. can easily afford. Not for me, but so we can continue making low-cost, patent-free poke stuff for the world's poor, preceded by a public apology. He immediately gets ratioed by this and deletes a tweet. Joe Rogan says, by the way, Peter, I saw that tweet you deleted. So then he continues to dodge. Joe, He says to the doctor, you have my cell, my email. I'm always willing to speak with you. He's been on Rogan's show before. He said, this is not an answer. I challenge you publicly because you publicly quote tweeted and agreed with that dog poo Vice article. If you're really serious about what you want to stand for, you have a massive opportunity for a debate that will reach the largest audience a discussion like this has ever had. If you think someone else is better qualified, please suggest that person. All these tweets getting 150 to 250,000 likes. So then he replies. Again, they're just quote tweet battling. Joe's just smashing him. Joe, if you're serious about addressing the poke and the fact that 200,000 unpoked Americans needlessly perished during the coup, yeah, how many people, okay, I'm not even going to contextualize, or I'm just going to read you the news here, including 40,000 in our state of Texas, blah, blah, blah. Again, Joe Rogan says, again, I'm going to ask you very clearly, are you willing to debate Robert Kennedy Jr. on my podcast? So he is not, he just outright, out and out refuses to back up his opinions. Now, what the left is saying today is, well, he's never going to convince any of these anti-pokers. And that's probably true, but who he will perhaps convince if he has, you know, a good argument is people in the middle. That's the thing. People often back out of debates and things like that because the issue is, you know, done and dusted on their side and the opposition side. But what a lot of people forget is that there's a lot of reasonable people in the middle who don't have their minds made up that you can convince. But instead, Peter Holtz writes, I'm concerned about the Elon Tucker link, and then fold in Rogan and RFK Jr., and it becomes a pretty formidable coalition of neo-fascist leanings. So, of course, Joe Rogan has the receipt saying, are you sure I'm not a part of a coalition with neo-fascist leanings? Seems like that's what you really think or what you're projecting to the masses. So this is after Professor Holtz keeps saying, oh, I'll come on your show, but I'm not going to debate my opinions. Now, I will agree that somebody who is very good at the debate is a skill. It absolutely is. And somebody who's very good can defeat somebody, in the court of public opinion, even if they're wrong. There's a lot of people out there who are very good at it, and they can argue from positions of just complete incorrectness, but because they're so good at it, they can trip people up. Now, I don't think RFK is particularly a well-known master debater, but that is a point. Then Mark Cuban sticks his pharmaceutical face in here, saying, and by the way, he did do very well. He got 170,000 likes, quote tweeting Joe Rogan, simply to shill his own drug company. Way to talk in generalities, Joe. Not saying there aren't a lot of effed up things about pharma. That's why we created mypharmacompany.com. But to ignore this, blah, 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 you aren't going to find the ground truth on the poke if you were to bring someone on who's focused on debating the issue, like this person. Trying to bully Dr. Holtz has... I've been bringing Huck to work with me. So anyway, the left is now whining about this doctor getting bullied. And by the way, let me remind you, I don't need to remind my beautiful, intelligent viewers, but let me remind the left. These are the exact same people that bullied people who didn't want to get the jab into getting it, forced it on employees. Mark Cuban, I'm sure, forced it on his NBA players, on his Dallas Mavericks team that he owns. It's funny how everyone's so concerned about bullying now, when these are the same people that wanted lockdowns, they wanted people to go to jail for not getting the poke, they wanted you to be ostracized from your families. All of this nonsense, right? And then Patrick Bet David replies, Joe is trying to bully the doctor. Interesting. Let me address these issues with your tweet. One, bullying. Millions of Americans from all walks of life were bullied into taking it. Some forced, many coerced. Many threatened to lose their jobs. Thousands of businesses went bankrupt. Families were divided. Late night hosts were doing skits dressed as syringes. Mayors of New York City offering free French fries if you took it. NIH director flip-flopping on masks. MSM calling anyone who questioned it conspiracy theorists. Are you really calling Joe Rogan a bully? Capitalism. What makes capitalism work? Freedom to buy and sell. He goes through all of that. You know, and then he goes, debate. I've watched you closely over the years. You're great at debating. He's talking about Mark Cuban. So great that you could argue both sides of any issue. I think you ought to make a run for the 2024 presidential election. You have some very good points. I digress. You know, and he goes on to say, the idea is like comparing Elon Musk, by the way, and Joe Rogan to mainstream media. That's a bit of a stretch, but I have an idea why you would say that. Before October last year, these type of conversations were not even possible on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube. Only in private settings. Many content creators were silenced if they interviewed people with opposing views on the coup. Our Robert Kennedy Jr. Interview was taken down on YouTube 2 years ago. Content creators were walking on eggshells, being afraid of being platformed. Musk isn't silencing anyone who argues for the poke. He's actually creating a climate to have debate. Just this week, MSNBC and CNN both said they wouldn't air Trump's speech because they already knew in advance that all he'd tell is lies. As if JB is the only one, Joe Biden, that tells the truth. He also writes, thank God for Twitter, Spotify, and Rumble. Shout out Rumble and other platforms who allow for this discussion to happen. You know, and I think that cost plus drugs, as a marketer, I respect your strategy of getting this into the thread to promote your business. A lesson for small business owners. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing has completely backfired. The media is having a complete meltdown. Elon Musk and Joe Rogan challenge a poke scientist to debate anti-poker Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And again, why Peter Hoetz says he won't debate RFK Jr. after the weekend? Why won't he? Because, you know, he doesn't believe that this is a guy that believes in the science TM, probably, right? Like that means you cannot question it. This is the very same policies that we've seen on YouTube, Twitter 1.0, Facebook, Instagram, all these places. You could not discuss this thing. Now there are more options. Twitter, you can openly discuss it. YouTube has relaxed many of their restrictions. Rumble, by the way, also wide open to discuss these things. So, you know, the idea that these guys are all crying and whining and complaining about, you know, Joe Rogan. Look at The Verge. Spotify does nothing as Joe Rogan peddles misinformation. It's like they don't. These people, the journalists, think that the only people you should be getting your information from is them. I'm not saying Joe Rogan's right about everything. He's asking a lot of the same questions that many other people do. That's why he's so popular. This is going to be an interesting week for the poke discussion. The new desperate plan rolled out by Bud Light, Tranheiser-Busch, a lot of people seem to be calling it, is, you know, have you ever heard the saying, desperation is a stinky cologne? Well, that's kind of exactly what this is. They don't really know what to do. They are refusing to apologize. They know, essentially, because of the way these, like, you know, ESG scores and all this kind of stuff, the way all that works, they really can't apologize publicly. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place as they are no longer the number one selling beer in the country. So they've been putting out statements. Now they're saying, oh, no, we've got it all figured out. We've got a huge plan because Americans are stupid. We're just going to flood them with new patriotic ads and they're just going to forget all about this. Now, a quick little check-in on the InBev stock. Is an interesting one, isn't it? There are a lot of lefties who invested money in them and have been talking about how much money they've made because over the past 5 days, it has been rallying. If you had just put money in, you know, it's up nearly 5% in the past 5 days, and it has recovered a good chunk of what it lost in the last 30 days. Now, of course, for the past 6 months, you know, not so much, but we also see in general, complete downward, a complete collapse in the stock today. Now, Anheuser-Busch pushes new Bud Light rescue, but has not offered any kind of apology for the Mulvaney disaster. Brendan Whitworth, the U.S. boss of Anheuser-Busch and Bud Light's parent company, will cut checks to reeling wholesalers and distributors, but also avoided apologizing for the Dylan Mulvaney fiasco. Now, for a lot of people who don't, you know, I didn't know before I started covering this either how this all works. You know, The distributors and wholesalers are usually independent companies. And because the demand had been so brutally diminished, they were getting hammered by, you know, just the loss in sales, the loss in money. And so Budweiser now is continuing to have to subsidize. And by the way, you know, I will say this, that is the right thing to do. It is not the distributor's fault or the wholesaler's fault that you decided you wanted to get political and do this kind of stuff. And so, you know, backing them, you know, helping them out, I think is, you know, the correct thing to do. Whitworth said, "The discussion surrounding our company and Bud Light has moved away from beer," he announced, "in a three-step plan to revive the tarnished brand on Thursday. The beer baron has yet to directly address the disastrous tie-up with the influencer, which led to the boycott calls that have knocked Bud Light from its two-decade perch as America's number one selling beer. Instead, he offered a financial olive branch from the Belgian-based beer giant that involves, quote, investing to protect jobs of our frontline employees and launching a new ad campaign this summer that will tout the beer as easy to drink, easy to enjoy." Well, that's been their position, their like that's been their tagline for a long time. That's not even new. Quote, "We are providing financial assistance to our independent wholesalers to help keep them afloat to support employees." He also said the company would reimburse distributors for the freight and fuel surcharge through the end of 2023 as cases of Bud Light languish on store shelves. The third part of the plan involves launching a more palatable ad campaign that will reinforce the "what you've always loved about our brand," that they think is easy to drink, easy to enjoy. Again, they think Americans are stupid. Or not just Americans, but people who are, you know, stepping out on this product around the world. Sales of Bud Light have consistently moved downhill since early April when beer drinkers outraged over the partnership. Modelo Especial, the Mexican lager, claimed the crown as America's best-selling beer in May, according to data compiled from Bump Williams. Now, tomorrow we'll get new data from Bump Williams as well. Will we ever really get to the 30%, you know, downtick in sales? It seems like a long shot, but I mean, we got pretty dang close. Beer brands in Anheuser-Busch portfolio have also seen a sales leg in recent weeks, including Budweiser and Michelob Ultra, while competitors like Coors Light and Miller Lite, both of which are properties of Molson Coors, have reaped the benefits. According to research firm Circana, sales of Bud Light fell by 23% year-over-year in May to $297.3 million, while rival lager Modelo Especial was catapulted to the top spot, generating $331 million, a 15% increase year-over-year. Now, that's a very significant number. You know, and you see Shark Tank billionaire Mark Cuban pushed back against the controversy, saying how woke ideology is good for business. Well, yeah, we saw Mark Cuban show his whole rear this weekend, you know, shilling for Big Pharma. Getting himself involved in the Joe Rogan discussion, debate, all this kind of stuff. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Our thing is, if you're let into the house, most recently famed country singer Garth Brooks said he'll offer every brand of beer at his new national bar. One thing is, if you're let into this house, love one another. He added that upcoming watering hole called Friends in Low Places and Bar and Honky Tonk. Well, I'm pretty sure that I've read some articles about a disastrous grand opening for that, but that's neither here nor there. You can see here, you know, Anheuser-Busch releases a "We Hear You" statement. We covered that on Friday. Now, Bud Light launching new effort to regain marketing dominance. Anheuser-Busch gives Bud Light distributors financial support. I mean, it's so bad that they have to now, some distributors will be paid 20 to 50 cents per case, depending on how bad sales have fallen, according to the report. Anheuser-Busch will also pick up the tab for any fuel and freight surcharges. The decision from Anheuser-Busch comes as Bud Light sales are down 25% year over year, and the beer is no longer the top beer in America. Nobody would have believed you if you thought that it would fall from the top spot over this, but here we are. The bad news for Anheuser-Busch and Bud Light is there's no end in sight. The backlash has been unrelenting for more than 2.5 months. Generally speaking, outrage and backlash lasts a couple of days at most. Then everyone moves on, except not this time. People have had enough of the woke nonsense. Bud Light pushed things too far by teaming up with Dylan Mulvaney, and now the company and Anheuser-Busch are feeling the pain. You know things are really bad when a powerhouse booze company has to start writing checks because the bleeding just won't stop. You know, when you see a lot of these articles, too, from the media, they're all spinning it and saying, like, oh, well, you know, actually, there's people who are less interested in lagers and things of that matter now. That's really why it's happening, which is baloney. We know this because it's going directly, the sales are getting directly translated to other products. Then if we look at this article, Anheuser-Busch employee hints company sabotaged Bud Light on purpose. Former Anheuser-Busch employee has suggested in an interview that the brewing companies deliberately sabotaged Bud Light in an attempt to cut costs. Starting in April, Bud Light had been subjected to a relentless backlash for a small branded partnership it had with Dylan Mulvaney in a video posted on Instagram. We know about the sales going on. The former Anheuser-Busch employee, who said he worked for the company for 10 years before being laid off in recent weeks, told conservative commentator Tommy Lahren in an interview that he believes the downfall may have been orchestrated. Speaking anonymously on Lahren's Outkick.com show, the former employee said that he had previously worked for the company in Houston, where everyone was upset with the Mulvaney collaboration, including management. Nobody's happy about it, said the unnamed man. Lahren confirmed his employment at the company through pay stubs. Everybody thinks it was a very bad idea. Obviously, you know it's sales and everything shows that. So, I mean, they expressed that fact that they were shocked. Why would they do this? What were they thinking, especially now? It's like the worst possible time, yet the best time if the company were trying to change the way it operates from a corporate level, he continued. That's just my opinion, and many of us are talking about that. It's like they plan it that way, that this was a strategic destruction of Bud Light. Now, I don't know if I buy that entirely, but I mean, stranger things have happened. Much stranger things have happened. The employee went on to say that since the company was acquired by Belgian brewer Inbev in 2008, several years before the employer joined the company, the new owners moved to change the working culture. When the company was bought by Inbev, a lot of things changed. You know, it's an American brand that pays extremely well with the benefits and things of that nature. When Inbev took over, they didn't like that. So they've been trying to get rid of many of the benefits of working for an American company like Anheuser-Busch, and they can't because we have a strong union. The employee speculated that Bud Light had been experiencing deteriorating sales for many years, prompting executives to say, let's put the final nail in the coffin. Now we have to do layoffs and a lot of loss of production. He continued, it will be easy for the company to restructure, let's say pay our contracts. We have a contract coming up and where they'll say, well, we don't have business anymore. So we're forced to change these things, and it's kind of how everybody feels. It's too obvious that they would just mistakenly do this and not expect these repercussions. I mean, anybody could tell you that this was going to happen. The former employee went on to say that things are so bad that there's no overtime for work available for the upcoming 4th of July holiday, despite it being the company's busiest time for business. He also said that laid-off workers were hoping to eventually return to the job once sales ramp up again, which is the hope because nobody wants to lose their job. I mean, I agree with the boycotts because I have children and I see what's happening, but we suffer because we have veterans at work. They're American citizens, our neighbors. We're losing our job. So it's a double-edged sword. I'm angry at the company at a corporate level, the man continued, just because they had to have known this was going to happen and they let it happen. They have 100 people on staff that literally sit there and monitor this stuff all the time, so it's pretty sure they had the conversation. As for why, it's only speculation, but from previous years and the way they tried to take away what this company has run in the past until now, it's not the same company it was when it started. It was a really good company. I mean, you see the difference of American families working there now. It's just bare bone, go to work, do your job, go home. It's not the same. Well, that is an interesting position to have. I don't know. I certainly see how people might think that. And this dude's work there, it'll be interesting. I mean, it was such a obvious, idiotic mistake that you got to give it some credence, I suppose. Pretty interesting update to the Call of Duty hullabaloo boycott. Perhaps this may be the last we hear of it. I'm sure El San will have something to say. But today, Nick Merckx returned to streaming after about a week off. I made sure I caught any opening statements he had. And it was good to see that he essentially did not apologize, stood by the things that he said, but also didn't, like, you know, blow it out of proportion. He said, you know, he said 8 words. He didn't, you know, go out and speak on anything. He can, you know, reaffirm that he's not anti-LGBTQ, this type of stuff. And I think he handled it really well. The one person who's not handling well, who's getting handed quite a few L's, but that's normal, is Hassan Piker. He is the Nepo baby nephew of Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, a man that has an audience of 12-year-olds who think socialism is the key because none of them actually want to work and earn anything and are looking for every possible reason to, you know, to excuse to be to why they don't have everything they need. Meanwhile, you know, Hassan, socialism is the best. You just haven't tried real socialism yet. Buys, you know, multi-million-dollar mansions and Porsches and things like that. Nobody really sees anything wrong with it. They just react, well, socialism is when you can't have multi-million-dollar house. So this is the level of intellect that we're dealing with. He took a really cringe shot at Dr. Disrespect on his anniversary, bringing up some unpleasantness that happened between him and his wife, that, of course, Hassan is not a part of that marriage. Nick Merckx absolutely torched him today. Dr. Disrespect had something to say, and I'm here for it all because these guys are obviously have much bigger platforms than me. Let me roll back to, you know, El San, talking about Dr. Disrespect's, you know, we'll see.
He's more loyal to Nick Merckx having his skin than his own wife. I know.
So he's bringing up, every marriage can be complicated. Things happen, but that's the level of, you know, on Dr. Disrespect's anniversary, he has to comment on another dude's marriage, which is supreme beta energy. It's as bad as, you know, as it gets, really. Like, look, I think, you know, Hassan can make all the money he wants. I don't care that he makes money. I think it's hilarious the things that he preaches versus the money he makes, but it's really none of my business how much cash he makes. It's also none of my business who he dates or comment. You know, it's weird. And so Doc had this to say.
Like who's this fat phony? Hassan?
Let's get it, baby.
This fat phony? He's so concerned about everything. He's concerned about the 2-time and what it's like. These people, man, this guy wouldn't let, see, that's the thing, too. Like, he wouldn't say these type of things if we're standing next to each other.
That's a fact.
He wouldn't.
I think we're clear.
Because, you know, he knows there's repercussions.
And, you know, we all saw how El San reacted to, like, that little 15-year-old kid or whatever that was trolling him. He looked terrified. He had a complete baby meltdown when somebody made fun of him at TwitchCon or YouTubeCon or whatever it was that he was at. He's a huge coward. He says a lot of this stuff, you know, and you know, I think a lot of people in the comments bringing up invoking Sam Hyde, things like that. Hassan has a good litmus test. If you don't dislike him, you're a questionable person at best. Even creators don't like El San. The doc would absolutely destroy Hassan, you know, I think, like, again, like, you're talking about another man's marriage. That's a little personal. It's a little cringe. You know, it's the left doesn't really have any moral standards or rules. And this is Nick Merckx responding to it as well today. I thought this was a good, these guys are all being good bros, him, Tim the Tapman, Doc. And this is now, he does, you know, Nick Merckx has kind of a potty mouth, so he does have some curse words in here. I do apologize, but this is the clip from his return today.
And, you know, I think up until that week, Hassan and I were, you know, were pretty cool. And I know he's not going to lose any sleep over our relationship or anything, man. I'm not either. But after hearing him say what he said about Doc, that motherfucker's dead to me. I DM'd him as soon as I heard it. And I said, you know what? Have your opinions. We can agree to disagree. You can say the things that you want to say, of course. But you're going to go up there and say that shit about Doc on his fucking his anniversary, right? It's a guy's anniversary. And you're saying shit like that in front of all those people? You're just going to let that rip? All right. I mean, fuck. You know, I mean, listen, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not fucking showing up.
I mean, yeah, I mean, but this is what Elsan does. I mean, this is the type of stuff that, you know, his 12-year-old fans think is great. You know, they don't understand any nuance. Relationships can be complicated. Look, I'm not excusing infidelity, but holy crap, how many years ago was this? And Doc like literally cried and apologized in a video in the internet, which he didn't owe anybody either. And I think it's pretty rich coming from Hassan. And the whole thing you see here, FaZe star Nick Merckx was heavily criticized on social media for saying they should leave little children alone, to a tweet showing protests over Pride Month being recognized in a school. This resulted in Call of Duty removing his bundle. We all know this. Hassan reacted to the decision on stream and criticized by saying he's more loyal to Nick Merckx having a skin than his own wife. Dr. Disrespect and his fans did not appreciate Hassan digging up the two times past in such a manner, and he addressed the comment in his own live stream. Just worry about yourself and what's close to you in regards to comments Hassan made. I think that's very realistic. Doc spitting straight facts, one viewer wrote, while another comment displayed a similar sentiment. Hassan and his viewers are so cringe. Others sided with Hassan, questioning things. You know, I mean, I think when you're talking about, I think when you're talking about someone's personal relationship, especially when their significant other is not a public figure, I think it's pretty low. I mean, maybe there are times where it's relevant. This certainly wasn't relevant. This was just a low blow by Hassan. And it's just cringe. But that's what, you know, that's what his viewers like. You know, that's ultimately, you know, what makes him happy. You know, and of course, Nick Merckx returned to streaming today. And, you know, I think the crowd was pretty pumped, and it was there were a lot of people watching him. I watched mostly just to see if he was going to make any statements or anything like that. I did not see what game he was going to play, but I don't know if he played Call of Duty or not. But all of this stems from, by the way, Call of Duty, you know, trying to take the moral high ground, trying to say, we are the moral, you know, high ground. We're Call of Duty. I'll say so. By the way, he is playing, looks like Fortnite. 26,000 people watching. Pretty good stream. I don't know what he normally averages, but I'd say that's some pretty good numbers. A lot of people really happy to see him back. And I think, you know, Fortnite's going to get a huge boost. I mean, I've seen either Apex Legends, Tim the Tatman's been playing Fortnite. Nick Merckx has been playing Fortnite. This is like kind of like a quiet quit. I'm sure they'll come back. And neither of them ever said, hey, I'm never going to play, you know, I'm never going to play Call of Duty again. Also, some comments I thought that were worth remembering or noting that Nick made on his stream. You know, he just called out, you know, I thought he was pretty clear. But one thing I thought was interesting is how he mentioned how many people in the space had reached out to him privately to show support, but leading with, hey, I can't say this publicly, and how he got sick of hearing that. And boy, I mean, I totally understand that energy. There's a lot of people that are, you know, in my DMs here and there that you just don't want to sell them out because I think it's kind of low. But like it does hit different when someone's like, you know, I've had people from Hollywood email me, DM me, stuff like that. And like, they'll say, oh man, you're just so on point about this stuff. But I, you know, ugh, gosh, you know, I can't, I understand you got to feed your family. I'm not like, you know, at some point though, it's like, dang man, have some stones, you know, it's, so he didn't name any names, which I don't think he has to, but there are a lot of people in the streaming space that kind of skulked around and quietly gave him support in the back, you know, in the DMs, but didn't actually come out to, you know, stand up for him and back him. And that never really feels great. You know, like when they're trying to cancel you, trying to, you know, ruin your career and people are like, yeah, I stand with you, bud. I just can't say anything publicly because, you know, I don't want to, or I don't want to risk my bag. There are definitely people like Tim the Tap Man and Dr. Disrespect who have plenty to lose, but stood by him. So it's not an impossible thing to do. It'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. Maybe this will be the end of it. We'll have to wait and see. Elson getting dunked on is always great to see too. It's another day and it's another creepazoid caught on, in this particular case, audio, where students were being called despicable by their teacher after challenging that a peer identified as a cat. That's right. That's what this teacher said to a student who thought maybe there's some mental issues with somebody who identified as a cat. A young student was called despicable by her teacher on Friday after asking a classmate how she identifies as a cat. The school kid and her friend were reprimanded by their teacher at the end of the eighth grade life education class, where they were told that they could be who you wanted and how you could identify is up to you. Following the lesson, one of the students asked a classmate, how can you identify as a cat when you're a girl? By the way, based and red pilled, based question. In the clip taken by one of the students, this is great. I love that students have smartphones now. The teacher starts off by saying, how dare you? You've really just upset someone there by questioning their identity. I think I have the audio. Let's listen to the audio.
How dare you?
You've really upset someone. Saying things like, should be in an asylum.
I mean,
I didn't tell you that. If they want to identify as a cow or something, then they're like genuinely unwell. Then they've gone,
yeah. That's true.
You're questioning their identity.
I wasn't a question. I was just saying about the gender. I didn't say anything about them.
But where did you get this idea from? There's only two genders.
Where did you get this idea from, you crazy person? You crazy person. Where did you get the idea? Where did you have the absolute unmitigated gall, the audacity?
It's just not an opinion. It's not an opinion.
There's only
opinion.
There's only a boy today. There's no other private part.
I love that these, I mean, like, so young.
Gender is not linked to do with the past that you were born with. Gender is about how you identify. Which is what I said right from the very beginning of the lesson.
I agree with that. Yeah. Why should I have to listen
biological set.
By the way, this, again, is a eighth grader absolutely wrecking their woke teacher.
There is actually three biological sets. Because you can be born intersex. You can be born with male and female body parts or hormones. Yeah. Did you know that?
Yeah, there's three. There's not 300.
Fine, there's three, not 300.
Biological sex. In terms of gender, there are lots of genders. There is transgender. There is agender. People who don't believe they have a gender at all.
Yeah, but you can't have that.
You can't have that. It's not a law.
Oh, this teacher can't even handle somebody who's 13 years old.
It's not a law. It's our opinion. We just just don't agree with it. Because then it's all just.
If you have a vagina, you're a girl. If you have a penis, you're a boy.
Yeah.
But cisgender is not necessarily the way to be. You're talking about the fact that cisgender is the norm. That you identify with the gender that of the sexual organ that you're born with or you're with. That's basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
Which is really despicable.
That's despicable. I'm not exactly sure what's despicable about it. I'm confused as to what is despicable about trusting the science.
How? When it's
if I called my mom right now, my mom would be sad.
If I called my mom, she'd be sad.
Well, that's very sad as well.
Oh, that's sad as well.
There's only a small majority of people who actually think that.
And why do you think we have so many problems in the world with homophobia?
Oh, my God. That's not homophobia. The teacher.
I'm fine with lesbians and gay people. Same. I've got nothing against them.
But gender is, there is a link between it. And you're saying that people can't change.
But they can't. They can't. Unless you get a penis attached. No, I'm not.
You're confusing sex and gender.
No, I'm not, though. Because if you have a vagina, you're a girl. If you have a penis, you're a
I mean, this is pretty basic stuff.
Even then, because you've got those genes.
How you identify. How you identify. It's not an opinion.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. If you don't like it, you need to go to a different school.
Oh, go to a different school.
I'm reporting you. You need to have
I'm reporting you. This reporting what? That an eighth grader in your class has a better grasp of the basics of biology than you do? I mean, this is insanity. You know, the fact that you call him despicable. A parent of another student, by the way, who received the same lesson, told the outlet that while they understood the point of the teacher was that they were attempting to make, they should not have prevented students from having discussion on the topic. I think that's also reasonable. I understand the point the teacher is trying to make. What bothers me is shutting down the debate in such a threatening and aggressive manner, which I don't believe is appropriate in an educational setting. Well, that's the thing. All this insanity stuff, this, you know, goofball stuff, it doesn't stand against scrutiny. And so that's why they call anyone who has a problem with it homophobic, or they get, you know, they put their hands on you or they scream at you. It's because all of this nonsense does not pass the smell test. And the fact that even this teacher is getting just steamrolled by a 13-year-old student over basic biology. Regardless of the education, subject education should serve to build awareness. Uh-huh. I mean, it's so insane that, you know, you see this from Turning Point. This is in UK. I mean, in what world, here Tristan Tate was, if these kids need lawyers, I will pay, had their families comment under this tweet. Genuinely curious, what lessons are these, because they're not math or English. Those girls made an accurate assessment of what was being told to them. For any student who is facing confusion and disassociation with their body, they should be provided mental health support and care. I mean, this is, you know, this, what's so wild about this is, like, you know, it's just creepy. Which then leads to this article. The trans school conspiracy revealed Midwest teachers trade tips on how to subversively and quietly transition kids without telling their parents and skirting Republican gender laws in workshop funded by, you guessed it, the federal government. Dozens of Midwestern teachers met online last week and traded tips on helping trans students change genders at school without their parents' knowledge while criticizing a raft of new Republican laws. DailyMail.com gained access to the online session hosted by the Midwest and Plains Equity Assistance Center, MAP, which is funded by the Department of Education, attended by 30-some teachers. In a four-hour workshop, they discussed helping trans students in the face of new laws on gender pronouns, names, parents' rights, bathroom access, and sports teams. Some teachers said they followed the rules, while others discussed being, quote, subversive on how personal code of ethics trumped laws and how to hide a trans student's new name and gender from their parents. So sometimes to make You know, I think it requires working subversively and quietly. We're working, seen by the parents, and if there's a nickname that we're trying to hide, it's by all these women, by the way. The idea, you know, the expose comes amid growing tensions between traditional parents who worry about newfangled gender ideas at school and some progressive teachers who say they need to protect trans students from their own families. Kicking off the workshop, Angel Nathan, the MAP specialist who hosted the session, said attendees would review the new laws in a bid to remedy the marginalizing effects and disrupt problematic policies. In the discussion and role-play sessions that followed, teachers, administrators, principals, and counselors spoke about trans students and their families in a way that would alarm many parents. Kimberly Martin, the DEI coordinator for Royal Oak Schools, which serves 5,000 K-12 students in Michigan, spoke about helping trans students keep their gender change a secret. We're working with keeping record-keeping systems so that certain screens can't be seen by the parents. If they are a nickname and we're trying to hide, Martin said, told Online Gathering. Jennifer Hagelin, counselor for the Ames Community School, which serves 5,000 other students, complained about Republican governors not signing a law that bars biological males from competing in female sports. She bragged about her own activism and taking part in protest marches. By the way, she's welcome to do that. I know I have my own right code of ethics, and it doesn't always go along with the law. Shay Martin, an Ohio-based trans educator who writes a socialist, feminist, and anti-racist blog, called the radical teacher and worked against laws that prohibits and restrict trans advocacy. The stakes are very high for trans youth. I think that requires working subversively and quietly, sometimes to make sure that these kids have what they need. I mean, I thought they weren't coming for our kids. Yanisa Jimenez, captain, the director of educational services in Woodland School District, slammed conservative teachers in a nearby district. Parents and teachers across Illinois in recent years have been angered by Democrat-led efforts to put tampons in the boys' bathroom so that trans female to male students can have access to them. Jimenez's captain told her colleagues about a nearby school board meeting that exploded over the controversy. Well, maybe just don't do that. Maybe make them available somewhere else then, if that's what you want to do. This is, I mean, a very real issue with these teachers that is keeps manifesting itself over and over again, doesn't it? Elemental, Disney's new film featuring a they-them pronoun character, has opened as the second worst opening in Pixar history, leading up to The Flash also having a disastrous opener with yet another they-them lead actor, this time Ezra Miller, film now projected to lose $350 million. I love it. This is great. People don't want this crap in their movies. Now, granted, the Flash movie itself is not necessarily referred to the Flash as they, them. That's Ezra Miller, who is an alleged cult leader, thief. He's raised his hands to fans. He's just an all-in-all criminal. People were fine to give him money. I don't know why that is. People were blacklisted from Hollywood for far less. But when he knew he was about to get canceled, he suddenly identified as non-binary and kept his job. What a coincidence. Anyway, let's start with the box office. The Flash falls down with just a $55 million 3-day opening. The Flash is now projected to end its worldwide box office run under $350 million, which will be less than Black Adam, The Eternals, Black Widow, and Uncharted. Warner Brothers will lose $300 million on this movie as a result of underwhelming response from fans. On top of that, Elemental had the worst opening in Pixar history with $29 million domestically, catastrophic situation for the $200 million budgeted film that's currently tracking to not even make $200 worldwide. That will be less than Lightyear, The Good Dinosaur, The Emoji Movie, and DC League of Super Pets. Now, the interesting thing is a lot of people say, well, what does this mean for the box office? Well, I think pretty much, you know, people are still raving about Across the Spider-Verse. I haven't seen it. I'm not inclined to want to see it, but you know, I can't deny that people seem to really like it and it's doing good at the box office. You know, and they also write, there should be multiple movies making over $1 billion every year. Right now, the only other movie with a chance is Mission Impossible. Something is off with the box office. Only a few movies have strong legs. Well, maybe you're talking about new movies. I mean, Oppenheimer, I think, could do really good. I think that Maverick was over $1 billion. There's been a few movies. The Super Mario movie was over $1 billion. What's happening at the box office is pretty clear. People are being more picky. When a movie looks good and it's not mired in controversy, they'll go see it. And they'll go see it multiple times. But when it's just more dreck, more like superhero, random XYZ formulaic movie, nobody wants to go see it anymore. The Flash disappoints with $55 million debut. Pixar's Elemental flops with $29 million. The battle of the box office lightweights. The Flash is a superhero movie starring Ezra Miller, criminal, emerged victorious over Pixar's Elemental film in a battle of box office lightweights. The weekend's new releases were once expected to ignite the summer's blockbuster season, both entirely missed the mark. The Flash stumbled with $55 million, and Elemental collected not even $30 million in their respective debuts. Both films fell short of already low expectations. Worse, they were very pricey endeavors, costing $200 million to make and roughly $100 million to market. So they're shaping up to be huge disappointments in their theatrical runs. I mean, they pulled back marketing because they knew that, you know, the films were going to flop. I get that. You don't want to throw good money after bad. But yikes. I mean, these films both needed to make $500 to $600 million, close to $700 million for The Flash to break even. They're not even going to make $300 or $400 million. In the lead up to The Flash, executives at Warner Brothers worked hard to convince the public that the film is one of the greatest superhero movies ever made. Per newly minted DC Studios co-chief James Gunn, directed by Andy Muschietti, the story picks up. Ezra Miller, don't care. But a tepid B cinema score from the opening weekend crowd suggests that the movie-going masses didn't even agree with its lavish praise bestowed upon the film by the people who made it. Shocking. Without positive audience scores or strong word of mouth, The Flash will struggle to rebound in the coming weeks, especially as summer season heats up with the release of Indiana Jones. That'll flop too. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, that will do well. And on July 12th, Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer on July 21st. I think Oppenheimer has a really good chance to do very well. I don't know about a billion, maybe. It's probably the only film that I'm actually excited about this summer. You know, The Flash also stumbled internationally at the box office with $75 million from 78 markets, bringing his global total to $139 million. Unless his box office fortunes rebound, they won't. The Flash looks to fall more closely in line with Dwayne Johnson's $200 million budgeted Black Adam, which opened last year to $67 million and failed to reach $400 million globally, ultimately losing money on its theatrical run. I don't know, you know, if maybe there was a time, there's a time in history where it was worse, but doesn't it seem like there's just nonstop huge money losers for Hollywood? The era of just putting out a superhero film and making $1 billion is gone. You can still do well if the superhero film is very good. For example, the Spider-Man series. I bet you if the new Spider-Man movie came out this summer, it'd make $1 billion. I mean, assuming it was good. Conceivably, Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, they have a strong fandom, but, you know, I think just a lot of people are over it. A lot of people, oh, okay, haha, joke. Oh, make it so funny. Everything's going bad around you, but haha, funny joke. You know, people are just, they're so formulaic that eventually people just got used to it. Analysts believe several factors, one of them being unenthusiastic audience reactions are to blame for the film's initial turnout. Another rollback is The Flash landed on the big screen without a traditional promotional push. That's because Ezra Miller has become a controversial figure in recent years due to legal troubles and allegations of hitting people. The actor has apologized for their past erratic behavior and went to, quote, treatment for complex mental health issues. made a rare public appearance at Monday's premiere of The Flash, but didn't engage with press or other publicity efforts that would be standard for a tentpole of this scope. They never should have released this movie. They should have walked away from it. Elemental, an animated adventure about opposites who attract, added a muted $15 million in international. Unlike The Flash, Elemental had been embraced by its audience and awarded an A CinemaScore, so there's a chance the ticket sales could recover over slightly over the next few weeks, especially since there isn't much competition from family films on the horizon. But there's no sugarcoating the debut of Elemental, which landed far worse start in modern history for Pixar, ranking below some of the more forgettable attempts in 2015's Good Dinosaur and 2020's Onward. The animation empire behind Toy Story and Up and Ratatouille has not been able to rebound from lockdowns when several of its titles were sent directly to Disney Plus and family audiences were trained to expect those movies at home. Now, that is part of it. I won't pretend like there's no families out there. I mean, I can say, for example, for me, there are several times where a movie comes out, I'm like, eh, that looks kind of good. But like, I'll just wait to watch it at home. It's not good enough for me to go to the theater. Like The Whale was only in theaters for so long, so I, you know, finally went to go see it. But that was definitely a movie that I was like, I don't need to see this in an IMAX theater. I would want to see the movie, but I'm happy. I'll even pay $20 to watch it at home. You know, but it's been difficult for a difficult market for films with original stories like Elemental, which revolves around the relationship between two seemingly different elements of fire and water. Brand recognition has been a big part of success of recent films such as Super Mario Bros. And Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Wrong. These were just good movies, objectively. People knew who Guardians of the Galaxy were. People knew The Little Mermaid, and that lost money. It's just people are no longer willing to pay for crap. Also this weekend, Lionsgate's horror satire The Blackening opened in sixth place, earning $6 million. That movie just looked terrible. Directed by Tim Story, the film pokes fun at common horror tropes that black characters are often first to die and follows a group of black friends who gather at a remote cabin to celebrate Juneteenth. Now, the film just cost $5 million, so it might actually make some money. It's difficult to say. Maybe it's funny. I don't know. It just seemed like a scary movie ripoff, like that franchise. But like, what if Scary Movie was all black people, and then here's a movie? Now, maybe that's just what I got from the trailer. Didn't really pique my interest. But you know, I think that people, you know, families are sick of taking their, you know, kids to see Disney movies. Maybe they'll let them watch them at home. Maybe people are waiting to hear, hey, is there some sort of, you know, the message going on in this movie? But ultimately, all these movies this summer are tanking. You know, like Little Mermaid, maybe will break even. All of this stuff. It's because people are not willing to pay for trash, and people are not willing to pay for woke trash. And that's where a lot of the Disney movies cross over, and also The Flash, you know, with everything surrounding Ezra Miller, there are a lot of people who just didn't want to support a criminal and a psychotic guy who's above the law. You know, endless videos of him committing crimes. He faced no real consequence for it. So I'm not going to reward him by paying to see The Flash. There are plenty of other ways to see the movie. I hope you enjoyed this video. If you did, make sure to leave a like on it, and we'll talk to you again real soon.